So they teamed up for an 8-9 month period, I think, Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page, the total time with the Yardbirds together. Is that true? I know they recorded Happenings 10 years time ago, and Psycho Daisies, the only recorded testament to their work together. But
yeah, I think that was about it. Yeah, it was not a very long period, actually.
Right. So I had a question here, why didn't it last? And you were kind of answering it already, that you just didn't...
There's that reason, but there's also another reason. I mean, you know, Jeff can be geniuses often are as well. He can be extremely moody, Jeff, you know, and character.
Yeah.
And we've been on the road pretty much all the time, because in those days that's how you earned a living, you know. And it wasn't comfortable touring often, you know, and Jeff, you know, we discovered the West Coast. Yeah, but like, if you see that Mad Men episode when he goes through, when the art director goes to the West Coast.
It's
a bit like, it was so weird, you know, because it was such a different society, you know. That's in a way what happened to Jeff, you know.
Yeah, I read you were on a Dick Clark tour with Gary Lewis and the Playboys, I read somewhere.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. And it took him away from the West Coast, and he just hated it, you know. So basically, I think he threw a moody, smashed his guitar up, claimed he had a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
Went back to the arms of somebody from Baywatch, I suspect.
That's funny. So you're saying he smashed a guitar on stage, or you mean? Or you meant somewhere else?
I think in a dressing room.
In a dressing room. Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, Jimmy being so pro, he said, oh, let's just carry on, man. We'll do it as a four-piece.
And we did, and I
can't personally, you know, loved our period as a four-piece. I mean, the best of recording that came out of that was the Rough and Ready Little Games album.
Yes.
Some of that material stood the test of time indeed. You know?
Yes, I was listening to that the other day. There's a lot of really great stuff, I agree.
Think About It and all that.
Yes, Think About It is a great, yes. Little Games, Puzzles.
And, you know, in those days, I mean, we were hooked up with someone who was supposed to give us another hit, and he was a great hit maker, Mickey Most.
But
he was a singles man. He didn't want to know about albums, so he pretty much left Jimmy and us to do the album on our own, you know.
Oh.
Well, in fact, he did, you know.
Yes, that's a good point. 10 Little Indians later on, yeah. I was going to ask, you were in the club scene of one of the 60s landmark films, Blow Up. Did you enjoy that experience? Were you in that?
I remember that. Yeah, in a very vibrant silk red shirt, I remember.
Yes.
No, I mean, love it or hate it. I mean, personally, I thought it was a very good film.
Oh, know? It's an excellent film.
Probably the most pivotal 60s film to come out of that decade.
I agree with you 100%.
A lot of people don't get it, but I think, knowing the scene, from my perspective, it was absolutely brilliant, you know.
In terms of capturing the scene, you mean of...
The photographer. The scene going on. I mean, it was so right on, you know.
Yeah.
I know it was a bit surreal, and maybe people who don't like that sort of thing didn't get it, but you know, personally, I think it's one of the best films ever come out of the 60s on the 60s, you know.
Yes, and so was your scene was it choreographed, or you kind of guys were left open to do whatever you wanted to do in that scene? How did that go?
Well, it's in those days, people were less budget conscious. I mean, that club, which was supposed to be the Marquee, when it was sighted in Oxford Street, so the photographer comes into Oxford Street after the guitar gets smashed up.
Yeah.
But actually the club itself was a big old mansion club from Windsor called the Ricky Tick.
Okay.
And the art directors went down to that club and they took Polaroids of every aspect of it, and they rebuilt it at Pinewood Studios.
Ah.
Every radiator, everything, you know, it was amazing. It was a set. He took 3 days to shoot that scene, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah.
Well, you wouldn't do that today, would you?
No, with the cost of everything, right?
No, he took 3 days, man, to do that scene. It was quite well choreographed, you know.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, amazing, but,
So it was a nice experience overall, then, I guess.
Oh, God, yeah, for me, yeah. Well, I love film anyway, because, you know, again, the connection with photography and everything, you know, and... No, I'm just so glad that we did get involved with that film, you know. I'm just a piece of luck and timing, I suppose, you know. Although he sussed out, and a lot of people have thought, well, you know, it was a Who thing, the smashing of the guitar. But in fact, the Who did it as a sort of they did it as part of the act, in a way, a bit of showbiz almost, you know. Whereas we were, you know, if Jeff smashed something or we kicked a lamp over, it was done out of frustration from the sound, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
More Freudian, you know.
I had read that Pete Townsend first did that by accident and then started to incorporate it into the act when people
it's
were
possible,
kind of asking
yeah,
for
possible,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your recording at the Anderson Theater has a sort of an infamous reputation. Jimmy
yes.
Page requested it, that it be pulled, and it has been bootlegged.
And
it features some songs that Led Zeppelin actually ended up using, which I mentioned earlier. But any thoughts on that?
Well, A, you can't fuck with history.
Right.
Because you can't. You mm-hmm. cannot fuck with something that was tangibly out there a year before Led Zeppelin claimed it was, you know.
Yes.
So there is that one point. Now, you know, we were doing things with that four-piece. The improvisation is amazing on some of it, you know.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it wasn't well recorded, and they put some sort of crazy audience on the track. You know,
right, yes, with a
stupid, you know.
Yeah, is that a bullfight crowd or something like that I heard? A crowd from a bullfight?
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot believe they did it. I must admit, it was epic who did it, you know, your guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, I to be honest with you, I had already, you know, in my mind and physically moved on into, you know, photography, really. In fact, I was probably in New York when they released the album, and I personally was on a sort of another planet, you know, and I didn't follow events too well. I know it got pulled. Now, whether it was pulled because there were too many Zeppelin ideas on there, you know, that Jimmy didn't want out there, or as Jimmy has claimed, you know, Keith didn't sing very well. But what the hell? I mean, the problem was the mix, not the
right.
And the audience they stuck on. I mean, I still get people coming up to me and saying that was among the most exciting albums or concerts they ever went to, you know.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. There's a lot of this in Mick Wall's recent book. I just actually interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, When Giants Walked the Earth. I don't know, it's a biography of Led Zeppelin, but it covers a lot of the Yardbird. I mean, you have a few mentions in there, too, yourself.
Oh,
you
okay.
mentioned a
yeah,
few
yeah.
times in it.
Yeah.
So you should check it out if you can. But,
yeah, I will check it out, yeah.
Yeah, now, Keith Relf, who I thought was an excellent singer, by the way, he had such a tragic death in 1976.
Yeah.
It must have shocked and saddened all of you.
Well, it did, but it wasn't unexpected in many ways. He was a very sensitive guy. Unfortunately, got involved in both drink and drugs, you know.
Ah, what a shame.
And he also was physically very unwell. He lost a lung during the period he was with the Yardbirds. He had almost appalling asthma, you know.
Ah.
And yet he was a harmonica and a singer. And a harmonica, and he was a great harmonica player, actually.
Yes.
For his style. I mean, what he'd do, he listened to those call and answer stuff he used to do, you know.
Yes, that's true.
Fantastic, you know. And I mean,
I agree.
He innovated that whole style. I always felt sorry. I mean, he was a great songwriter too, you know, and his interpretations, he got airbrushed a bit, Keith, I feel, unnecessarily, because of course we had the three great guitar players, you know.
I agree with that.
But let me tell you something, those guitar players, especially Jeff, who, you know, they all have egos, right?
Sure.
And the thing about that was that, you know, When you're on stage in those days, you didn't have these sophisticated sound systems where everybody could be put at a certain level, right? Now, poor old Keith had to belt it out on terrible sound systems. With guitar player could just go and turn up to number 11.
Right.
You get where I'm coming from.
That's true. That's a good point, yeah. Now it's all state-of-the-art, though. You can play around with everything, yeah.
Well, you can get proper levels, but we never had that. And you know, poor old Keith, I mean, they were all loud guitar players, apart from Eric particularly, you know. And, you know, they had their egos, they wanted to have a big fat sound, and they had the equipment to do it. Well, unfortunately, singers didn't really have that sort of equipment, you know, to reach those decibels on top of it.
Exactly.
So he got crowded out a lot, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he was a perfect singer for the Yardbirds personally, but...
Yeah, I do too. Some of that stuff he did. I mean, some of his, you know, the pop stuff too was fantastic, you know.
Excellent. Yeah. So right now, in terms of you, what guitars are you using live when I would see you at BB King's? What are you...
Well, I've got, you know, I have got some of my old, a couple of my old Les Pauls, but they're, to be honest with you, they're made with, like, you know, trunks of trees.
Oh, you mean in terms of being heavy?
So they're so bloody heavy.
Yes, mine too.
So
yes.
I have a lovely Les Paul Custom, which is what I call it, my wash and go guitar. You know, it's got all the right pickups, a great fretboard. It's not ostentatious at all, because I don't really dig all that ostentatiousness, to be honest with you.
Yes.
It's very simple, it's very light, and it's traveled with me for some years now, and I just love it, you know.
Oh, excellent. So that's the primary guitar you'll be using at BB King's?
Absolutely, yes. Same guitar as was on the recording.
And right, and what amps are you playing through? What amplifiers are you playing through?
Well, I'm a great lover of Vox AC30 top boost.
Oh,
you know?
Fantastic, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we've been with Vox for years, we always try and use those amps, you know.
So Vox is a company, of course, around a long time. I mean, the Beatles used Vox.
We use Voxes everywhere, yes. No doubt. Well, they made that Vox AC30 with a top boost. That was a revolutionary, that was the amp, man, unbelievable, you know.
Right, yes. I know this is a tough question. Well, not a tough. How does it feel to be such a huge part of rock and roll history when you look at it? And also,
well,
how
gobsmacked.
Did it? I'm sorry.
Gobsmacked. I'm gobsmacked.
Right.
to be talked of in those terms. I don't feel it myself, you know. And I know I was there and we did all those things and wrote all those songs. And it's strange, really, if you want my honest opinion.
Okay.
I just feel. I feel terribly, I feel terribly honored, but, and I suppose the history is there, you know, but...
Oh, yes.
What can I say? I mean, you know, it's
And I think it's growing over time, actually. I mean, I think it becomes even more so over time, as time passes.
Well, you know, Jim and I have had the band on the road for some years now, and it's got better and better, you know, and, one way or another, And again, the reason to do it, I'll tell you this honestly because I hate the traveling, is when you get audiences like you get at BB King's or some of the festivals or concerts or wherever, and you think, well, hey, man, this makes it all right, you know. This is great music, and there's an audience out there who you know, it really means something to them.
Yes. Yeah, a friend of mine saw you play with the Zombies, a show. It was, I don't know how long ago it was. I couldn't make it, but he said it was just a fantastic show. Was it the Zombies and...
Yeah.
I can't think of the third band right now.
It might have been that American tour we did last year, which included Spencer Davis.
Yeah, Spencer Davis Group, yeah. Exactly, yes.
It was a great lineup. And I think we did a UK tour with the Zombies. It was almost a perfect match. Because they're so different to us, but perfect foil, you know.
And that is with Rod Argent and...
Colin Blunstone.
Yeah, Colin Blunstone, fantastic.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, it was fantastic, yeah.
Great. Just got a couple more for you. How did it feel to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, knocked me over with a feather. As
yeah.
I said right at the beginning, we thought we'd be forgotten after 4 weeks. Fantastic. I mean, in the American Rock and Roll Hall of Fame... Talk about Coles to Newcastle. That's a saying we have, you know.
Okay, yeah.
We took your music and you honored us for it.
Although
we messed around with it a lot.
Messed around with it, yeah, and improved it in a lot of ways, too, and just took it to a whole nother level, really, when you look at it.
Also, what I'm proud of, I'm proud of this, is that, you know, because when we first started playing, we didn't realize that in America there was... you know, such an apartheid between the black and the white music scene, and generally we didn't know that. You know?
Yes.
So I feel tremendously honored that although we took, you know, a lot of ideas from black musicians, we kind of got white audiences interested, thank God, you know,
in
that music. We kind of helped break down that, if you like, we helped break down that... musical apartheid, you know.
That's right. I was going to mention, you know, like Smokestack Lightning or Here Tis or A Certain Girl or things, you know, like Too Much Monkey Business, of course, Chuck Berry, but I mean...
Yeah.
It's really, it's incredible. The last Swan here. Any plans to record with this version of the band?
Well, you know, it's funny because just before you rang, I was talking to Jim. He lives in Provence now, of course, in the south of France. And I was talking to him, and we were talking about, you know, stuff, because we've got this tour coming up starting next week. And we were talking about the possibility of what we may or may not do, or be able to do. And it's sort of an ongoing discussion, really. I think what we'd like to do is some sort of live DVD of some kind, perhaps, with this band.
Oh, that would be great.
It is very difficult. I'm not going to deny this. In the catalogue of the Yardbirds, there's so many great songs.
Yes.
And even the new ones we did, one or two of the new ones we did on the new album, because we discarded so much new material because it just wasn't working, you know. It has to, if it's the Yardbirds, it has to be of a certain something.
Right.
And it's very difficult, you know, to reach that standard, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I love crying. So I don't know about that. It's no good producing, especially now, because there's so many great bands out there, really, to be honest with you. And so there's still good writing out there as well. And, you know, it would have to be of such a quality of high caliber. It's difficult to know whether, you know, it would be possible.
Right. Well, I hope so. I hope you do it. And actually, the song Crying Out for Love, I loved from Berkeley.
Oh, we're going to be that's good. We're going to be doing a version of that on this tour.
Oh, great. Yes.
We're just talking to Jim about this. I was saying, wouldn't it be nice to start it off as an acoustic version?
Right. Oh, that's a good idea.
And then bring the band in, you know, gradually bring the band in on the arrangement, you know.
Excellent. What about Mystery of Being or Dream Within a Dream?
Yeah.
An Original
we'll do
Man.
That stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent songs, really. It's a great album.
What happened about those songs is that they did start to feel like Yardbird songs.
Yeah.
And now we play them regularly in the set, and people enjoy them as much as they do, say, old Shapes of Things or Over Under Sideways Down.
I agree with you.
It fits like a glove, you know.
I agree with you. That's the impression I had listening to it, too. They take on a whole new being. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.